let's open the discussion for the talks.
Oh, it's tough. Yeah. Well, you can actually do a better job from the weak lensing itself, apparently, just by fitting isothermal spheres to the clumps, and then you find that they're like 700 kilometers per second, so three comas merging. Well, the interpretation for the cluster seems to be easier than for the field, so...
Well, considerably, with the new model, the field. We had not found a solution, maybe just something like that. It's difficult to accommodate both the consistent amount of blanking and two magnitudes by the of one, and the change of color you might see of only maybe 10 percent. Whereas now the blue mountain, which we talked about, is less, one magnitude. Therefore,
but the combination actually should give a constraint on the IMF if you can measure it both to high accuracy for the same galaxies.
You want to get it there, right? You want to strip the dynamic condition of the theory? Because the color is independent, the Z dependent, whereas luminosity clearly is the cosmology dependent. One way to accommodate this is, of course, to change the cosmology. So now the luminosity of which you drop, that means it's going to more and more closed universes. The closed universes, and therefore then something is going to happen. So, but I don't think a lot of people are happy with that. A lot of people are not.
You can answer anti-diversity.
Well, there are two answers. One is that it's a relative measurement. So whatever causes the fundamental plane at low redshift, you know, you study its evolution. Now you can look at it in another way. It's you can say you look at surface brightnesses. You can give the whole talk without actually mentioning mass light ratios, and that's just you take the fundamental plane as an empirical relation. Now, but again, you can just look at the evolution of surface brightness with redshift. I mean, that's the thing you're basically measuring. You can just look at a given velocity dispersion and effective radius, you can determine the surface brightness of a galaxy. And you can see how that evolves with redshift. And that's what I showed in the fundamental plane plots. There's one thing that you might worry about, and that's sort of infall of dark matter without any luminous mass between redshift 1 and 0, exotic things like that. But I think even if a galaxy falls into a cluster, I think the expectation is that within an effective radius, the mass is conserved. But there are people here that can answer that much better than I can.
Substantial dominations in the history of the galaxy that strengthening the edge of the solar system. And so if you imagine for every elliptical that was 5 or 6 years before you see it, so present day it was the original 0.8, the original one,
yeah. Yeah. Well, there's another. Yeah. Sure. It, within one cluster, the scatter in the fundamental plane gives a very strong constraint on that, and that actually excludes, you know, models like that. Because if you take away half the galaxies in coma, say the, you know, the ones with the lowest mass-to-light ratios, you basically find the same offset of the fundamental plane, because the scatter is so low at low redshift. There's another possibility that you can hide these, you know, very high mass-to-light ratio galaxies that you would then predict to exist, you know, and that are not in the coma cluster. You would have to hide them somewhere in the nearby universe. So the scatter from cluster to cluster is a constraint on that. But still, you know, if there's significant evolution in the number density of rich clusters with redshift, you know, this whole story changes. And that's actually first pointed out by Guinevere, I think, in 1995, that there's a similar bias as for the early types, a similar progenitor bias on the level of clusters. You know, by selecting these massive clusters, you look at a special, you may look at a special population at each redshift. So we might have to look at groups to, you know, if it turns out that there's significant evolution, you know, one of the future prospects I noted here is that we'll know, you know, with XMM and Chandra, we know at least what the luminosities of, you know, what the X-ray luminosities do. And then if it turns out there's significant evolution, we might have to study groups. Yeah.
So
well.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. Well, actually, more massive because you know this one is 1150. It's hard to find a cluster at low redshift with that kind of mass. Oh, yeah.
Population as a whole.
Yeah, and dark matter surveys to find clusters. Many things that would be nice. Yeah, but at least you could constrain it. Yeah, if you would find there's no evolution in the most massive clusters, number density, the most massive clusters, you're probably fairly safe. Oh, yeah, I mean, not saying you can do it.
We were actually asked another question, right? The question of the starburst and dwarf galaxies. We just wanted to measure how much the starburst in these objects will boost in the luminosity. And we think that we have strong visualizers and strong starbursts, and yet it came out to be about 1-2 magnitudes. And so that doesn't mean that you pick the galaxies in a quite different way.
That's also true for the Galen or Nalen sample as well, that they basically have samples that they study kinematically. But then the only thing that they could measure velocity with for were very strong Michelin objects, so they ended up in with samples like yours. And that's similarly true for the Mars Eclipse sample. They again chose very strong Michelin objects. Just like I mentioned about the compact objects, they do not fall. I think once that down with all the data, the clicking picture comes out of it, all of the things are fine. If the general public reads the literature, you will be confused by the fact that some groups claim a large amount of lightning versus not. You have to go to the expert. Expert
will be
forced to say. Yes, I'll be forced to say. I don't have to give a talk about how fast those things.
A formal solution to the lack of color evolution, color difference between the cluster and field elliptic one that I would not like, however, is the systematic difference in the ILM. in that the luminosity evolution depends on the IMF, because colors are independent of IMF. So if elliptic ellipsoid galaxies in the field were at flatter IMF, they will evolve more rapidly in luminosity, and the color evolution of weather will be the same as in the dark period.
You expect a big chemical difference in that case, and that isn't. You'd expect a big chemistry difference in the stars, a big difference in the alpha to iron ratio, for example, in the stars that have
well, no, in fact, I did say that I agree with this interpretation. However, suppose that to take a space value that's different in an information network, say, version 3 in the cluster, version 1.5 in the field, would that be consistent with the small, very small difference that exists between cluster and field every time galaxy at zero range?
They all converge. They all converge on today, so there's no problem.
Yeah, they have to. The question is that you see whether this is consistent.
Yeah, because as you see, when you make a point to be zero, joining them, you keep back as zero. So, at that mission there, you can allow an offset.
As far as I understood, there are not many constraints on the IMF in the range around one solar mass, and that's the range of interest for this particular problem.
Because remember, you have your transparency. These are correct.